Welcome to Double Take with Matt and Jake, either week 4 or 5 of Quarantine Podcast. If there's a staff, one of their microphones can't figure it out, so do apologize for that. I think we'll be okay, though, for the most part. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, it should be fine. I mean,
yeah. Today's Wednesday. I just finished a hard day of work. Matt finished a hard day of assigning a chapter and a half of To Kill a Mockingbird, so we're both ready to go.
Yeah, should be good.
Yeah, there's nothing we can only talk about the NFL draft so much, and it is next week, so we wanted to take a small break from that. So with that's what's going on. We're trying not to talk about Corona stuff too much, so here's what we're going to talk about tentatively, and we'll see what happens. Utah Jazz players Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert are kind of having some fighting, some in-house fighting, so we'll chat about that. The XFL declared bankruptcy, fired a bunch of people, basically quit as the second football league like that in a row to go under, although different circumstances than the AAF or AFL or whatever last year. There's an incredible docu-series on Netflix called Sunderland Till I Die, about a football team, out the soccer team for us Americans, so we'll talk about that. The NBA had a horse competition. We'll talk about that. And we'll just kind of see what happens. There's not really an agenda. Matt, is there anything you want to talk about first or anything? You texted me that list, but is there anything else you want to talk about that's not on the list?
Well, this actually happened after I texted you, but before I really had any time to research and look into it. But U.S. Soccer is shutting down its development academy. So I actually think it could be good. Do you want to start with that, or do you want to go do that later?
Yeah, tell me about it now, because I'm bummed out. It doesn't seem like a good thing from the onset, but tell me about it.
Well, I mean, it's bad because they're out of money, so that's a problem. I think what could be good about it, though, is I think that we're going to follow a little bit more of a European model where the clubs are going to have a little bit of a larger role in development. And, you know, that's been Real Salt Lake has had a really good development academy for a long time. FC Dallas has had a good one. I believe both the last LAFC just started one that's looking good. Atlanta United is trying to invest a lot of money in theirs. And I think part of it is them being out of money, but the other part is recognizing that, hey, if the clubs are going to do this and we don't have to pay for it, that would be better. And I think a lot of the players, honestly, would rather just get their development from one of these academies because then they have a contract just as soon as they get old enough. It's a little bit easier for them to get in the door. So I think in a lot of ways it makes sense. Now, they just announced this. I haven't MLS also put out a statement about this that I haven't been able to read yet. So it's going to depend a little bit, or my opinion is going to depend a little bit on what MLS plans to do. But theoretically, I think this could work out well.
So, and you're right, Matt. Dallas, Real Salt Lake, and the LA squads, from my very limited knowledge, I'll admit, regarding youth academies, do have the best ones in the United States. But let me ask you this then. Does that mean that those academies are going to get more money, or they're just going to have access to more players because players, instead of going to the U.S. Academy, they're going to have to go to MLS club academies? Is that what's going to happen, or how is it going to – do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, at the moment, U.S. doesn't have any money to give to the clubs is what it sounds like. That's why it's shutting down. So, yeah, I just think it's too early to tell. I don't know. Where I think this does get problematic, does become a little bit of a concern, is there's a lot of, like, youth teams for kids that, like, aren't necessarily trying to turn professional, but just, like, want to have a club team that they can play with. I think those kids are going to be affected a lot. And also, I think it's going to hurt the women's game a lot more than the men's. I think that is where we would want to be concerned, because I think the NWSL is going to have a harder time funding this than Major League Soccer, partly because U.S. Soccer is already putting a lot of money into the NWSL. It's going to be hard for them to put even more in for their development academies.
It's just so frustrating for women's soccer. You know, they just can't catch a break, it seems like.
Right.
an ironic laugh, just like, are you kidding me type of, you know?
Right. Well, that's just how it works with sports. Like, usually the men are going to be able to figure out a way. Someone's going to want to pay for them. And the women just have to figure out where the money's going to come from. And right now, I don't know where that is. So that's a bummer.
Man, now let me ask you this, because I feel, and again, I'm not an expert at all in this, but I feel like the United States soccer, U.S. soccer, they're so intertwined with MLS where, like, English football isn't reliant or relayed a whole lot into the Premier League. You know, Germany isn't intertwined with the Bundesliga like U.S. soccer is with MLS. Is that fair to say, or is that just because I live in the U.S., I see that relationship more?
It's probably a little bit of both. I would imagine you're probably right. Well, especially in the early years of Major League Soccer, the U.S. soccer had to fund a lot of the stuff. Now it's starting to make enough money where I think it can be a little bit more independent, which is probably good for the league. I don't know how U.S. soccer is going to feel about that, but
one thing, Matt, that I small issue I could see in this plan is the goal of U.S. soccer, the goal of MLS is to keep the best American players in America playing club soccer. I think that's a fair goal to say. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think they would like that. I think they're realizing that to be a top tier league, they're going to have to spend a few years as a selling league. But yes, I think in an ideal world, they would like to keep the best U.S. players.
Well, that speaks to my point, Matt, because the best U.S. players are in Europe. Like Christian Pulisic, he played in Dortmund's academy. Like, that's where he grew up. DeAndre Yedlin, he's in Newcastle now. He started in the United States, but he's in Newcastle now. Like, the best U.S. players aren't playing in the United States. So for the U.S. soccer to give their academy up and relate to MLS clubs, I feel like, and I guess at the end of the day, it doesn't matter where, what academy they're in, if it's not like sponsored by U.S. soccer, quote unquote. But if there's a 13-year-old kid who, like, a team in Germany or a team in France or a team in Spain, whatever, they're like, hey, you can come play in our academy. We want you, blah, blah, blah. They're always going to choose that over like Portland or Atlanta or Red Bulls. You know what I mean?
Right. As they probably should. That's what I would do.
So I don't – is there – it's frustrating because I don't have an answer, but I just – there's – I think we should be a top soccer nation, not right now, but in 20 years, I don't see why we shouldn't be. Apparently we don't have the money, but we have the resources in general and we have the athletes in general. I don't see why we shouldn't be a top soccer country in 20 years, but I also don't see a path to get there at all.
Well, what I think the path is I think, you know, I just think that, you know, having more money, being able to put more money into development, hiring better coaches, especially in these youth leagues, is going to be what's important. And I'm fine if the Major League Soccer clubs do it. In fact, ideally, Major League Soccer is going to be making more money, so owners are more willing to put money into their own development academies. But what I think you're going to have for a few years is to make money, I think that we're going to have to sell really good players. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be American players. Like Real Salt Lake just sold Jefferson Savarino for a ton of money. We could sell Albert Rusnak for a ton of money. We sold Bofo Saucedo. He's an American, but we sold him for a lot of money. I think that being able to do that, that's going to get us more money, get more revenue in. And eventually, as players start to see better and better players come out of Major League Soccer, better and better players are going to be more willing to come in. And then at some point, they're going to stay. It might be in 20 years, like you said. But I think that we should just adopt the selling model that like Borussia Dortmund or some other lower high level teams, if that makes sense. But like Dortmund, they make a lot of money by selling their players. I know now they're at a point where they would probably ideally not like to sell a lot of those players. But I feel like it's going to be easier for Major League Soccer to not get caught in that trap because they're a whole league as opposed to just one team.
Yeah, Matt, who would you say is the most valuable, let's say hypothetically, like MLS, an MLS American player is going to be sold to Europe? Would it be Jordan Morris who we'd get the most money for? Is there a player I'm missing that's American, plays in MLS, we could sell? I would bet Jordan Morris, but you probably have a better answer.
No, Jordan Morris is who I would think of. We have a center back, something Vickers, Stuart Vickers. He's a pretty good young player. You know, Justin Glad is good, but he's probably got to play better if we're really going to be able to sell him to make, you know, that kind of a profit. But, you know, like we sold Matt Miazga recently. He made a lot of money. But yeah, Jordan Morris would be the one who would make the most money right now.
I think, apparently, let's just talk about MLS while we're on here, Matt. David Beckham, and this is not a David Beckham only thing, but he's a big proponent of getting rid of the salary cap with MLS, and it's a lot more complicated than any other league salary cap, I think. What are your thoughts on that? I'm pro getting rid of the salary cap.
As a fan of Major League Soccer, I would like to get rid of the salary cap. As a fan of Real Salt Lake, I hope we'd never get rid of the salary cap.
That's also how you feel about promotion relegation.
That's exactly how I feel about promotion relegation. So, yeah, that's just how it goes with small market teams. We just, you know, the LAs and the Atlantas are just going to be able to spend more money than we are, and we're not really going to be able to keep up. Yeah, and, like, you know, that's just, it's not a good situation for a team like Real Salt Lake. So as far as I know, there's probably more, but there are two teams that have furloughed employees or fired employees because of the coronavirus. They're Real Salt Lake and Minnesota United, who are two of the smaller market teams. I think it was last year, I was an intern for Real Salt Lake. It was the first season of the Utah Royals, our women's team. It might have been 2 years ago that I did this, because this was going to be Utah Royals' third year. So yeah, this would have been 2 years ago. That's not super important. The point is they were doing these broadcasts and they were giving the Royals the same treatment as the men. It got to a point towards the end of the season where Deloy Hansen was losing a ton of money trying to do these broadcasts for the Royals and Real Salt Lake. So he cut the Royals broadcast altogether. He stopped sending a broadcast crew to the other cities to travel with the team. So like Brian Dunseth and David James would just stay in Salt Lake no matter where the game was. And that's not to say that Deloy Hansen doesn't want to spend money. He spent a ton of money on the academy team. He's spent a ton of money to buy the Utah Royals. He's willing to put money in, but it's just getting to a point where there's not enough money coming in for him to be able to support the Royals and Real Salt Lake and the Monarchs, particularly now with the coronavirus. All this to say that, you know, like Atlanta's owner, he's got revenue coming from other sources, from the Falcons. The LA owners, they have money that they can pour into this, and so Real Salt Lake just wouldn't be able to compete. And I'm a bigger Real Salt Lake fan than I am a Major League Soccer fan, so I would rather have Real Salt Lake be able to compete and hold the league back.
Is this a good tie-in to the Sunderland doc on Netflix, just stay with soccer?
I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, we don't want to give any spoilers away, and it's not really a spoiler type show, it's just a docu-series. I just started season 2. I think there's only 2 seasons out right now. Matt, you finished it, is that right?
Yes, yeah, I finished it.
So when I mentioned promotion relegation, in the rest of the world with soccer, and I'm sure a lot of you know this, but in general, like the top or the bottom 3 teams in the Premier League, we'll say the top league in England, they get actually kicked out of the league and sent to what's called the championship. And then the top 3 teams from the championship get promoted to the Premier League. And so you're always going up and down. Well, not always, I guess, if you're in the middle, but if you, unless you're in the Premier League and you're at the top already, but there's always, you can't tank in soccer because you're going to go down a league and lose a ton of money. So in theory, you're like old high school rec team. In theory, like how it's set up, it technically could make it to the Premier League. That's never realistically going to happen, but that's how it's set up in the rest of the world. And
well, I will say real quick, not that Leicester City was a rec team, but part of the reason that was such a big deal is because 5-6 years ago, were they in the fourth division or only the third? I think they were in the fourth.
I'd have to look it up.
Yeah, but anyway, but that's why it was such a big deal when Leicester City won the whole league, is because they had progressed and been promoted from lower divisions. But sorry, you can proceed.
Yeah, and now Leicester, well, now I guess the season's over, but they were third in the league this year as well.
Yeah.
But Sunderland, so the documentary on Netflix called Sunderland Till I Die, it follows a team called Sunderland who I'd say they're genuinely in the Premier League. Matt, the season they're following, they had just been relegated from the Premier League to the Championship, so like the second league. And then it follows them trying to get back to the Premier League and having to sell players, bring new players in, and the struggles with the financial, like just going from the Premier League, like the revenue, the TV revenue, they said it went from 100 million. Pounds, I'm assuming it's pounds. I don't know how many dollars it is, but 100 million pounds to 40 million pounds, which whatever many dollars that is, that's a lot. And just that struggle while trying to fight and maintain relevancy, but just having exponentially less resources to do it. And then the second season, same thing. It just talks about, you know, the struggle of like a club trying to compete and get back up, get promoted again. And it's cool because it's not about soccer. That's why I like Friday Night Lights, man. Friday Night Lights is not about football. It's about the town. And this docuseries, Sunderland, is not about the soccer team. It's about the city of Sunderland and the people and how much of an impact culture really has on it. So a lot of people who talk about, oh, like professional athletes shouldn't get paid this much. They're not teachers, whatever. They're not doctors. And it's true. Obviously, like putting a ball in a net is less important than performing surgery or being a teacher. But it also does, first of all, I just say it's economics, like there's more demand for that, but also big picture-wise, like that just means so much to a respective city. And like, that's kind of what the docuseries is about.
Right. Yeah. No. And also as a teacher, you can find another one of me. You can find another Donovan Mitchell. You know what I mean? So,
right.
So that as much as I would like to get paid more, and I certainly think I could get paid more than I'm being paid right now. And Sunderland, you know, they're in an interesting spot, kind of like Real Salt Lake. Sunderland is at a point where the owner has decided he's not going to put any more money into the team. That's not where Real Salt Lake was. Deloy Hansen still wants to continue to invest money. He just needs to be able to start making some money back. It can't all be coming out of his pocket is the problem that he's facing right now.
Yeah, because you know, it's not an economic show. I know I'm talking a lot about the money, but it talks about like, you know, to get back, get promoted again, you have to bring in all these players that have to fit the coach's style. Like they need better talent because a lot of players left when they left the Premier League because they want to be in the Premier League. But also at the same time, you're losing a ton of revenue from the TV deal and things like that. So you're dealing just with a short deck. Is that the right term, Matt?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and it's just like a complete struggle and like it affects the whole city. Like they, one of the people they talk, interview, show, I guess, whatever, is the Catholic priest in the city. And like it shows people in the church in their Sunderland jersey. And he's talking about like how it affects so many jobs and lives in Sunderland, and this is all over the world, so it's not just Sunderland specific, but I've always said, and when I say always, I'll say especially like after going to a soccer game in Europe, but I think I was newest, but there's like, we don't have anything in America like soccer in Europe or South America, and I think you'll agree with me, Matt, but I went to a game in Barcelona, like a Barcelona game, and it was more intense. Regular season game, more intense than anything I've been to. And I haven't been to like everything, but most intense by far event I've been to. And it was just like a regular season soccer game. And I think you agree with me that soccer, Europe, soccer in South America, we lived in South America for a couple of years. It's just, there's so much more passion and intensity, I think, than any other sport we have here.
On an average level, sure. I mean, I'm sure, like, you can absolutely find, you know, football, particularly football, but some basketball fans, like the Duke student section, for example, I think would be up there. But I think as far as the average person, like, their level of being a fanatic or being crazy involved in the sport, soccer in Europe and South America is certainly higher than what we have here.
Yeah, I think just, like, I'm talking, like, in terms of the city.
Like, yeah.
Closest thing I've seen, like, in San Francisco, when there's a Giants game, you could tell. You could just, you know, there's a Giants game. Like, you could kind of feel that in the city. And also, like, I was there when the Warriors won their first championship, so obviously people were nuts about that. But, like, game day Barcelona, Matt, you went to a Fulham game, so you can tell me how it was there. That's a team in England. But the game in Barcelona, again, regular season game against, like, some random team, the whole city is singing, like, they're in jerseys, like, all day. Not just, like, the people I've seen, but literally the entire city. There was just, like, a buzz, like, an energy about it. And I don't know what your experience was like when you went to the game. But and even when we lived in South America, Matt, you were, like, in the cities where the big teams were. I was in the country we were in Chile. I lived in smaller cities, so they were, like, Division II teams and things like that. But it was still, like, such a huge part of, like, the whole culture. And, like, the top fans, like, obviously they're going to care about their team as much as top fans of any sport, really. But I just mean, like, it's more ingrained to the culture, I think, than anywhere else.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I mean, I don't really, like, I know there's parts of Africa where they really, really like soccer. So that would be interesting to look at. And then, like, I don't really know much about rugby in Australia and New Zealand. Other than that, it's a big deal. But let me put it this way. You're not going to find anything more intense than soccer in Europe or South America.
So the short answer, I guess, is watch the Sunderland documentary, docuseries, even if you don't like soccer. Cool. It's such a cool insight, I think, into the city. And Sunderland's right by Newcastle, which is my favorite English soccer team. So they don't talk about Newcastle at all, but it's right next to it. So geographically, it's a cool part of the country. Yeah, those are my 2 cents.
Yeah, that's a pretty good soccer topic for not having any soccer going on.
Yeah, well, we don't have any basketball going on, but we can talk about Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert. Do you want to set the table really quick for that?
Yeah, so basically what's going on, and I'll say before this, I don't think that there was any animosity between Rudy and Donovan. They weren't necessarily like best friends. I don't think that's anything to worry about. You're just gonna get along with some players on your team better than others. Point is, they just were never in each other's social media posts. Then when the coronavirus thing happened, or this was 2 or 3 months ago when they started, probably closer to 2 months ago, they started telling NBA teams, like, hey, you got to be, you know, more careful, got to wash your hands, you got to do this, you got to do that. There were players in the Jazz locker room who were taking those things seriously, were washing their hands or, you know, staying 6 feet apart or whatever. I assume Donovan Mitchell was one of those players. I haven't heard that for sure, but you would think that. I know that Mike Conley was one of those players. Rudy Gobert was not. And Rudy Gobert, everybody's seen that clip where he kind of went over and touched the microphones. I don't think that was as big of a deal. But I've read reports that he would, like, you know, go around the locker room, like, go into Mike Conley's locker and, like, you know, touch his shoes or his socks or whatever, and do that kind of thing, just kind of to kid the other players on the team. Fast forward to the game in Oklahoma City. Rudy Gobert tests positive for the coronavirus. They postponed that game. They shut down the NBA. The Jazz players have to stay in Oklahoma City overnight. They're in the arena until 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. Donovan Mitchell ends up testing positive for the coronavirus. And then there's Adrian Wojnarowski reports that Donovan Mitchell was angry at Rudy Gobert. And there's a lot of, I don't know how much you're into Jazz Twitter, how much you follow Jazz Twitter, but there were a lot of Jazz fans who were really mad at him for saying that. It's like, oh, this is Woj, he's just making up a story, he's trying to stir up controversy. And my reaction to that was like, that's not really a Woj thing. Woj just kind of reports what he hears, you know? And then, you know, a month later, we're hearing that Donovan and Rudy have not talked. And then there's a report in The Athletic that says it appears that their relationship isn't salvageable. And some people were still saying, like, oh, that's not true, yada, yada, yada. But Donovan Mitchell still hasn't said anything about it. Rudy Gobert has come out and said, I've talked to Donovan. You know, at the end of the day, we both want to win a championship, and we feel like we can do that together, which I think is true. I totally believe that. I think they're going to be able to play together and play well together. But I think that they are still mad at each other. And the fact that Donovan Mitchell has not come out and said anything about Rudy, I think that really says a lot about where the relationship is. So, yeah, that's kind of where the situation is. We've got a long time until basketball starts. We've got a long time before either of those players can leave. So not that you want to have a bad situation, but if there's a time for a bad situation, this is probably a good time for the Jazz to have it. So I don't know what your initial thoughts are, but that's basically what's been going on with the Jazz. They've probably been the most interesting team to follow since the NBA got canceled.
Yeah, I'm kind of disappointed. Like, it's the first time I think that it's shown a bit of Donovan's immaturity. I'm on the kind of the side, like, yeah, it's like, it's obviously Rudy, like, messing around and stuff. That's obviously not cool. But also, I don't think any of us were taking this as seriously as we should have been, including Rudy. Like, I think a lot of people who are attacking him also weren't taking, they weren't exactly social distancing or anything in before they had to, you know what I mean? So yeah. I don't think it's fair to make him the scapegoat necessarily. That doesn't mean what he did was right, and he apologized for that. I think Donovan Mitchell doing the interview with Good Morning America where he, I don't know how to phrase what he did, but he basically, like, didn't put out the fire. Just make it up, man. Like, even if you're so mad at him, like, just make something up. If you're on interviewing with Good Morning America and they still hasn't said anything, that's honestly bugging me just because it seems kind of immature, even if Rudy was wrong. That's just how I feel about it. Like, it's the first time I feel like since he's been with the Jazz that he's shown a bit level of immaturity, because he's still only, what, 23, 22?
Yeah. He's really, really young. So I think that's a fair point. I think the people who are still mad at Rudy, I think they're, you know, maybe... I think some of that is misguided, and even the people who are defending him, I think that's misguided as well. Because the defense from people who are not what you just said, I think what you said is different, that nobody was really social distancing and nobody was taking it seriously. That's true. I know I certainly wasn't. What I've heard a lot of people say was, oh, well, Rudy didn't know he had it. Well, that's the whole point. That's what we were told, is that you might have this thing even if you don't know it, so you should be doing those things. So I think he still needs to be accountable for that. And I think that we shouldn't act like he was doing things that other people weren't doing. But at the same time, if, you know, Rudy was going into Donovan's locker and, you know, touching his shoes with water and stuff, and Donovan's like, hey, dude, I don't want you touching my stuff, I don't want to get sick, and Rudy keeps doing it, I think that it's fair for him to be mad. I think maybe he should have forgiven him at this point, but I totally understand why he's, you know, still mad and still upset. I think there's a really good chance he gets over it by the time the basketball starts, and I certainly think they're going to be able to play well together. But I do get why he's mad.
Well, I agree 100% with you. Like, I don't like this is not the same thing, but like, if people touch my shoes, I lose my mind. So like, I totally get, like, if, when we don't know what happened, but like, let's say he did ask, say Rudy, like, don't touch my stuff, and he kept doing it. Rudy thinks it's funny. Donovan's like trying to have his space, or he's trying to take it seriously. I get being annoyed at that. So I'm not even blaming him for being annoyed. But like you said, and this doesn't really matter, I think, but we don't know that Rudy gave it to Donovan. Donovan could have given it to him. Donovan, the night before the game, the Nets game, I think it was the Nets game, but he went to his home in Westchester and, like, New York's epicenter, this whole thing. Like, we don't know Rudy gave it to Donovan. We don't know either of them gave it to either of them. It could have been a different player. Like, just because they were the first ones to get tested doesn't mean they're the first ones to have it.
Yeah. Also,
what I just said doesn't really matter for what we're talking about. I think other people saying Rudy gave it to everyone, that's not true necessarily. Like, there's just no way to know that. But I get Donovan being upset. But also, it's been like a month. It's been over a month. And just fake it for media is all I'm saying. Like, just fake it. Like, he sees those woe streaks. He sees the stuff that says unsalvageable. Like, just squash that, man. Like, even if it is unsalvageable, like, just how hard is it to fake it is all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, that's true. He's definitely not doing what you're supposed to be doing for PR, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, part of the reason I think that we like Donovan is that he's so, you know, authentic and such a charming person, and I feel like we really know him, and so you know, maybe for better or worse, he's just still being authentic and he's not going to lie to us.
But the fact that something can be something like this can be unsalvageable, like, it's not like Rudy Gobert, like, stole his car, or, you know what I mean? Like, I know it's serious, but also, like, it's not ruin a relationship serious. It's serious on a world scale and on a global health scale. It's not ruin two teammates' relationship serious. It's a different level of serious. Like, just because it's not serious for Donovan, I'm not trying to make light of the whole situation we're in, but isolating Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert's relationship, it is not that serious. Like, it does not need to ruin a relationship. It's just like one talk, sorted out. Rudy already apologized. I'm sure he's at least tried to apologize to Donovan Mitchell. Like, just if someone apologizes and they mean it, like, that should be it. And you can still be mad, but if they've apologized, like, you can't hold a – my opinion is, like, you can still be mad and upset about what happened, but you also, like, if the person apologized and is trying to move on from it, you just kind of have to accept it and be a grown-up about it.
Yeah, it's hard because I think, you know, and Rudy, from, like, listening to him and, you know, seeing what he's donated and the way that he's talked and carried himself, it does feel like he, you know, really has remorse, and it feels like he's learned, and, you know, to a certain degree that he's sort of changed. And so at this point, it is on Donovan. The problem is with Donovan at this point. So, you know, hopefully, like, I would say there's only like a 10% chance that Rudy gets traded or leaves as a free agent. There's like a 90% chance, or there's a 70% chance they stay mad, but everything's totally fine. And then I think there's like a 20, 30% chance by the time they get to training camp next year, or they stop playing, Donovan's cooled down, he's let go of it, he's, you know, maybe grown up, as you said, he's maybe being immature, and this thing is totally fine. I think that's not the most likely of the three options, but I think it's much more likely than it is totally unsalvageable and Rudy has to go.
Yeah, because Rudy Gobert, next season, he's eligible to extend his contract beyond 2021. He is eligible for a max contract extension. So
Supermax.
Supermax contract extension. So his contract isn't up till 2021, but he's eligible starting next year at some point for that Supermax contract extension. And he's absolutely worth that, but the Jazz do need to get the situation sorted out. However big a deal or not a deal it is, it's a deal at this point that the Utah Jazz need to get sorted out. Because going back to soccer, just sports in general, if you're a team like the Utah Jazz, like Sunderland, that's just going to be talked about, those small market teams, if they get two all-stars, I don't know, like, soccer doesn't have an all-star game necessarily, but if you get two players at that level, like Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell, and you're the Utah Jazz, you can't just let one of them walk or have to trade one of them. Because in the NBA, trading a superstar, you do not ever get that value back. No matter how much you get back, trading like a top 10, top 20 player, Rudy Gobert is a top 20 player. you're not getting that value back no matter what you get back in return. So the Jazz cannot afford to let Rudy Gobert walk or be forced to trade him. They need to fix this.
Yeah. I would argue, especially with somebody like Rudy Gobert, who, even though we think he's certainly top 15, I think there's a good chance he's top 10. Other teams, I don't think, recognize that as well as the Jazz. I don't think other teams would be able to use him as well as the Jazz. So if there's ever a superstar to get undervalued in a trade, it's going to be Rudy Gobert, and the Jazz know that. But let me ask you this. I certainly think I would totally be happy to pay Rudy Gobert a max contract. I don't know if I'm excited about paying him a super max contract. I would have been able to keep him, but I'm not very excited about paying him a super max. How do you feel about that?
I mean, from a logistics standpoint, it's hard because that does take away so much money, especially because we're going to be, the Utah Jazz, going to be giving Mitchell a ton of money soon. Mm-hmm. But also, I think, like, it just kind of sucks. Like, we did, that's why it's so important. And this year, we didn't get to capitalize on it because of the pandemic. And the last couple of years, the Jazz have been bounced out of the playoffs. But that's why it's important to capitalize on these players when they're on their rookie deals, when they're on their first contract extension. Because if both, let's say hypothetically, Rudy gets a super max, Donovan, let's say normal max, that's still a ton of your cap room. And it just puts the Jazz in a tough situation. So it's not the best thing in the world from a team building perspective, but I still think, especially a small market team like Utah, you have to do it, especially if they're in a win. If they're like Charlotte, and if they're in the Charlotte Kemba Walker situation, they should trade them, but they're not. As of right now, they're a top five-ish team. They're a contending team in the Western Conference, and a team like Utah, you can't just trade that guy. So if he says Supermax or nothing, just got to give it to him, even though it's kind of puts you in a hole, is how I view it.
Yeah, no, I agree for sure.
That being said, Charlotte should have traded Kemba Walker.
Well, they should have if they were going to let him go. I heard an interview, and you know, I don't know if this is how things changed, but he was someone asked him, it's like, would you take a hometown discount or not take the Supermax and stay with Charlotte? And he was like, why not? So why don't you just give him a regular max?
Well, I agree with that. I think they should have option A, signed him, option B, traded him. The only thing they shouldn't have done is what they did.
Yeah, no, that was – yeah, you could have got – like, what do you think – like, if I knew Kemba Walker, if I was just renting Kemba Walker and I was like – I don't know, the Lakers might have been able to do it. Boston might have been able to do it because they didn't have Kyrie. They could have got a first-round pick or maybe a first and a second for him.
Or shed some salary or something.
Yeah. So
they could have got something because Charlotte's in a bad situation. We don't have to go deep on the Hornets, but they're in a bad situation as far as, like, team-building perspective. In terms of just, like, the contract situation, it's not, like, the worst thing in the world. It's not like they have a bunch of Andre Drummonds rolling around. But they definitely could have used either more draft capital to rebuild or get off some contracts, and they just let him walk. And the thing is, like, they knew that was going to happen. Michael Jordan knew what he was going to offer Kemba Walker, what he thought Kemba Walker was worth. It's not like it was a surprise at the end of the season. He was rushed into a decision. He knew what was going to happen.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just probably not a very good GM. I wonder if they're going to talk about that on The Last Dance. I mean, I'm sure they're not, but they might mention it a little bit.
That's April 19th, right? That it comes out, that Michael Jordan doc?
Sunday.
There's two recommendations from us for you for your viewing pleasure. Now, we got 5-10 minutes left. Do you want to wrap up briefly with the XFL? Also, I want to mention before I forget, today is the day that Jackie Robinson made his MLB debut. So today is the day that all the MLB teams wear number 42 in his honor. Willie Mays, San Francisco Giants legend, so my guy, he's talked about, like, without Jackie Robinson, he's the one who gave me, like, I knew I could play Major League Baseball because Jackie Robinson did it. He's just, like, I would say him, guys like Jackie Robinson, Jesse Owens, track athlete from the 1936 Olympics, which were in Germany, Berlin, I think, but Germany for sure. Guys like that, I think, are just, like, the coolest people, like, all time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, well, shout out to Zachy, is I guess all I have to say.
Yeah. It's a bummer we're missing it.
I know. And 42 is a cool number. It's a good number.
It's a good number.
Yeah. They should make a better movie. I heard the one where, what's the guy's name? It was Black Panther?
Chadwick Boseman.
I heard he was like, because he was Jackie Robinson in that movie they made. I heard it was all right, but they should make like a dope movie. Like an intense one, I think. I think it'd be cool.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
All right, Matt, let's wrap up with the XFL real quick. I've seen a lot of people, again, it went under, went bankrupt, fired a lot of employees. I guess every employee they fired because it's not a league anymore. I think it actually, to my surprise, I would not have said this at the start, but I actually think it could have succeeded if it had the money and the funding, which it did, and it had a bit of time. There's an XFL player, a safety, who played for the St. Louis Battlehawks, my favorite XFL team. He's going to get drafted in the mid-rounds. P.J. Walker, the quarterback from Houston, I think, signed with the Carolina Panthers. Like, they were doing a lot of good things and a surprising amount of interest. I think they actually could have made it at least – they had a path to making it where it could become sustainable. So getting cut short because of the coronavirus, I don't think it's a failure necessarily. Like, oh, these spring football leagues, they never work. I generally do think that's true, but I actually think this one at least had a chance to break that trend. So it's kind of a perspective-wise, not the worst thing in the world compared to what's going on, but still a bummer that the XFL got cut short.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't going to watch it, but it seemed like other people were interested in it, and like there actually seemed to be interest in the viewers. So, yeah, no, you're right. It did look like it was going to work, so it is a bummer. And that's what's hard about this is like even you can have a really good functional business, and then if you just run out of money, you can't like wait. And there's going to be a lot of like restaurants and small stores that you really like that after all this is over, you're going to go to, and they just won't have enough money to hold over, and they're going to close, even if it's a great business.
Yeah, I feel bad because I like wouldn't like make it appointment viewing, but like if it was on, I'd watch it because like St. Louis quarterback Jordan Tamu, who played at Ole Miss, he was one of my, I don't say one of like my favorite players, but I liked watching him in college. So it's like just players like that you remember from college, it's fun to watch them again. That was like the best point of it for me with stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, bad timing, terrible timing.
I know. Yeah, that is weird. So, Well, maybe one day we'll get a spring football league.
Maybe in the meantime, though, feel free to subscribe, rate, and review. Tell us what else you'd like to talk about. Next week, the NFL draft. The NFL draft is Thursday, so I don't know if we're going to do maybe one right before it, maybe one right after it. We'll figure that out. But drafts next week. Also, we're recording this on Wednesday. By Wednesday or Thursday, that article I wrote regarding those perfect draft prospect pairings, Matt's going to run through that real quick. So that'll be up by Thursday. That's on mjdoubletake.com. Check that out. Yeah, man, I'm excited for the draft next week. Can't wait.
Hey, we got to get football somehow, right?
We got to get football somehow, yeah. Well, again, any last words, Matt, before we sign off?
Keep washing your hands.
Wash your hands. Appreciate it, everybody. And we'll talk to you guys next week.